I think it's really important for folks to understand, and it's a really great opportunity for the criminal justice system. What the grant has allowed us to do is to host training, and it was virtual training, of course, at this point, but host training for approximately 20 professionals over representing 11 counties and 5 different judicial circuits from around the state on what's known as the sequential intercept model. And it's a really strategic planning tool that will allow us as a community to map our local criminal justice system and identify gaps and resources, and how we can then come together as a collaborative unit and work to improve those resources to better address co-occurring mental health and substance abuse disorders.
Certainly. Now, I believe whenever this press release had came out, you said the training was going to take place. It has since taken place.
Correct.
Tell us a little bit about some of the local folks who were able to take part in this training and what that involved.
Absolutely. In addition to myself, Judge Nathan Kairos, who's our Associate Circuit Judge in Montgomery County, Sheriff Matt Oller, Sheriff Craig Allison of Montgomery County, one of our local probation officers within the circuit, our local community mental health liaison through the Arthur Center, one of our public defenders, and we've had also jail staff, jail administrator from Warren County, and the community mental health liaison from that county as well in a separate training session. So we have a very good contingency from our local circuit who are now all trained as sequential intercept model facilitators. And our next step will be to gather together our entire local three-county circuit contingency and then get together and have a further mapping session for the entire circuit. And at that point, we're going to be reaching out to and inviting other community stakeholders who are not necessarily in the criminal justice system itself as judges or lawyers or law enforcement officers, but stakeholders within the community who provide services relating to health, mental health services, faith-based organizations, and other stakeholders who will have the opportunity and who can bring to the table the important resources to help us fill those gaps.
Well, let's break this down a little bit more. This is a system for people who suffer from mental disorders and maybe have gotten involved with illegal substances. Would this mean that you would be able to reach out to the church to get involved to keep them from maybe going to jail? Is this how this would work?
It's a great opportunity building on the good work that we've done over the years through treatment courts and through local crisis intervention team trainings with law enforcement and with our mental health local providers such as the Arthur Center. Building on that, we are now able to take the entire sequence of when someone has contact with the criminal justice system at the very early stages, such as with a law enforcement contact, and at each point, whether it's initial contact, whether it's jail detention, whether it's in court or on probation or parole, and to help identify those sequences and those intercepts at where we can look at having people screened for services, having people identified as good candidates for treatment court, for example, having people identified early on if there are mental health and co-occurring substance abuse disorders that we need to know about, and how we can help them help identify resources on whether it's pretrial release, whether it's probation, whether it's as a diversion early on for mental health services, and taking that opportunity collectively is the goal.
Yeah. Is there going to be an opportunity maybe for more grant money in the future to keep this training going along?
I don't necessarily know about that. The state has a few different trainings going on. We were one host circuit, the 33rd circuit down in the Boot Heel, based out of Scott County, was another host circuit. And the Supreme Court of Missouri has had an initiative over the past year or so on leading change in criminal justice system. This is a center point of that. And I think the next steps are, once a large segment of circuits and local facilitators are trained, then to start working on those local convenings and to build on all of that statewide.
I think it's an outstanding program. I've heard a lot of people give high praise for this, and definitely a good thing. Another thing I wanted to talk to you about this morning was, of course, the courts kind of reopening, maybe a little bit back to normalcy, I don't know, since COVID.
I'd say at this point a lot back to normalcy. And that's really, I don't know that I would have said a lot 2 weeks ago, but I think I can pretty confidently say a lot today. About a week and a half ago, the Supreme Court issued its latest orders relating to COVID operating procedures. And in essence, we are now at the end of a transition period into normalization. So as you know, over the past year, since last March or April, we have been operating under COVID operating procedures and phases. And we obviously did that for a reason, and that caused a significant change in the way courts operated for the past year. At this point, the Supreme Court has been able to determine that the need for those procedures has abated, and they are allowing local courts to return to a normalization procedure. So next week, you're going to see a significant return to pre-COVID court operations. However, we have made some very good observations over the past year. One of the silver linings of the COVID experience was that we were able to identify some processes and some opportunities to do things a little bit more efficient and a little bit more conveniently for people. And let me give you a couple examples. One of them is technology. We have been operating on largely video court for the past year. While we're transitioning back to a large amount of in-person proceedings, particularly for things that we have to do in person, like jury trials or things of that nature, we still know that there are good opportunities for video dockets for a good number of types of cases. And we're going to keep using those in conjunction with in-person hearings for the right cases for a couple reasons. One being courthouse security, and another being the opportunity to provide a better and more convenient experience for attorneys, for witnesses, for crime victims, for litigants. So we've certainly been able to identify that as an opportunity to keep. The other thing we're going to do is have the opportunity to manage the dockets, I think, from a time management standpoint better, and keep some staggered dockets. Instead of bringing everybody in at 9 o'clock, for example, in one big docket call, we're able to space them out more during the day, because we've been doing that for the past year, and we've learned that that's a good thing also for security and for efficiency.
No doubt about it. Well, I'm glad things are getting back to normal, and appreciate your visit this morning. I know you have to get to court by 9, so we probably better let you go.
Well, I appreciate it. I'm sure some other folks will appreciate that too.